Marshall, can you please call our next case for us, and then we'll proceed from there?
The case before the court is A180997, Florek Free Venette.
Thank you. And counsel, it's my understanding that we have appellant's attorney arguing from Rosso, and I believe we can see you on our camera, and you can see us and hear us?
Yes, good afternoon, Your Honor.
Thank you. Let me just double-check connections before we begin, and then Respondent's Counsel is across the street in Centennial in St. Paul. Can Respondent's Counsel just say something that will call your image up?
Yes, hello, Your Honor. We are indeed across the street.
Okay, thank you. And then we have one of the parties in a third location, but also hooked up with ITV, is that correct? Is someone listening from Bemidji or somewhere else? Am I correct in that? Maybe I'm incorrect.
I believe their mic's been muted so they can hear us, but okay. We cannot hear or see them.
Okay. All right. But we have no reason. We think that's working so that the party can hear. Okay. Great. Well, the case has been called. Counsel for appellant, you understand our procedure. I mean, note your appearance at the commencement of your argument in chief, and please monitor your argument with the 15 minutes based on the TV screen or lights if you have them. So, counsel for appellant, we're ready to begin.
Thank you, Your Honors. Alan Fish, attorney, Rosso, Minnesota, for the appellant Randall Venette. Your Honors, before the court today is an appeal of the result of a jury making findings on two separate causes of action. What we've appealed, Your Honor, is the judge's disallowing our motion for the judgment notwithstanding the verdict. This is a kind of a novel case, Your Honor. This was a boyfriend and girlfriend that had dated for many years, and factually, I won't delve into the case very much because it's not horribly relevant, but they had slept together that evening consensually and had sex a few times during that evening. The second and third times was after they had both fallen asleep naked and essentially in one another. The allegation was that this was a violation of Minnesota Statute 609.344 because the respondent later was told by the appellant that he took her while she was out, although the explanations varied. Regardless, we ended up going to trial, Your Honor, on these allegations under civil causes of action, including negligence, common law negligence, Your Honor, common law battery, as well as negligence per se, pursuant to Minnesota Statute 609.344. The negligence count was voluntarily dismissed, and the two remaining counts went to jury. In a nutshell, Your Honor, this case can be summed up quite simply that the theory alleged by the respondent, which the court below allowed, was that an allegation of an intentional tort, a battery, can be pled two different ways, that in the form of a common law battery, as you would any sexual assault case, but also adding the novel theory that this could be some type of a negligence per se or negligence case, which we, as a court can see from the record, vehemently opposed prior to trial, during trial, and in post-trial motions, Your Honor. The very nature of a negligence per se claim, first of all, Your Honor, is that it's a form of negligence. And I was thinking about that a little bit, and what is the difference between negligence and battery? They are distinct things. Negligence is the apportionment of fault, a deviation from a reasonably prudent person. Negligence can be based on intentional acts. Nobody disputes that. But the intentional act of sexual assault, which is a battery, is not a form of negligence. It's a form of a battery. So what our issue has been all along.
So we know, counsel,
yes.
I mean, the jury did not find a battery.
Correct.
Right. And so, I mean, we know from the case law that negligence per se can be based on a statutory violation, which might be a penal statute. So what penal statutes may it be based? It seems to me that you're saying that it can be based on some penal statutes but not others. And what's the rule of law and what's the authority for distinguishing between some and not others?
Well, that brings me back to my original comment that negligence per se has to be a form of negligence, Your Honor. You know, so there could be various penal statutes that really are not intentional harms, but it could be a negligent act that results in a penal violation. Those, under various theories, could be negligence per se. But once we get to the area of battery, I've not seen in any jurisdiction, in any case law cited by the respondent, where an intentional battery, and particularly a sexual assault, could in any way be couched as a form of negligence.
So what are examples of penal statutes that are only, you're saying it can only be a penal statute that's based on a negligent act, where violation is negligent instead of intentional? Can you give me some examples of what are unintentional penal violations?
The very most basic way is a person driving 56 miles per hour who's involved in an auto accident would be violating, would be negligent per se because they're violating a traffic statute. That has nothing to do with harm. It has to do with a form of being not prudent. Whereas, and that becomes a negligence per se because it says 56 creates fault. A reasonably prudent person may say, driving 56 miles an hour, even 4 miles over the speed limit, that's okay. Everybody does it. You get out on I-94 and everybody's driving 5 or 10 over the speed limit. A reasonably prudent person may not find that negligent, but they would be required to under a negligence per se standard.
So we should be able to look at a criminal statute, presumably, you're saying, and then be able from there to decide whether that may be a basis for negligence per se or not. I'm just wondering what we look for. I mean, when we look at the test for whether a statutory violation, can be used for negligence per se, you know, the Supreme Court has given two factors, whether the person harmed is intended to be protected by the statute and whether it's the harm that legislature intended to prevent. But there's nothing that's at least encapsulated into that by that standard as to whether there's any form of intentionality or not underlying the statutory violation.
And I think that's the red herring that's suggested by the respondents. You have that they seem to be implying that because there might be an intent required, that we are arguing that therefore it could never be negligence per se. We're not saying that. Many, many violations of statutes that could be negligence per se could have an element of intent. But none of the negligence per se statutes, Your Honor, that have an element of intent are battery. None of them are torts. None of them are sexual conduct. That's why we have a negligence and a deviation from negligence called negligence per se, because it's a subset of a form of negligence. And then we have those are both deemed common law causes of action. And then we have a separate subset called battery or assault, as many like sexual abuse cases are charged out against clergy. They're assaults and they're batteries. What I'm seeing here is that they're trying to say that just because there could be a statutory violation, a violation of any statute could be deemed negligence per se, but you first have to get through the definition of what negligence per se is, and it simply doesn't go through that definition.
So that's a good example, actually, the one with the clergy. So if there's a violation of a sexual assault statute, criminal statute, by an act of sexual assault as defined relative to, you know, someone being a clergy member and a person who, whatever the language is, where it wouldn't necessarily be a battery, would it, if it's consensual action? I mean, can there not be sexual conduct that involves someone that actually is a crime under the statute but may not be an intentional offensive act under a battery? Or is it always going to be a battery in your view? Those lines, which is sort of what this one is about. It's something a little bit not like obviously a stranger sexual assault.
And I look at it differently. Under Lichtig, which has been cited repeatedly, they say what a battery is, and a battery is an intentional, unpermitted offensive contact. So the definition of an unpermitted offensive contact could be set forth in a statute, and certainly the language of 609.344 could be used to define the word unpermitted offensive contact within the definition of battery. It could have been a jury instruction to form the basis of a battery, but it is not, as you know, which is very clearly set out, a form of negligence or negligence per se. The RWVTF, Lichtig, all of these, the expansive body of case law that is out there shows that a battery and negligence per se are two different and very distinct causes of action. They require distinct acts on behalf of the defendant. So what I think the respondent is trying to say is that any type of intentional tort, whether it is negligent, whether it is a harmful offensive, it could be an assault, it could be punching somebody in the face, could be a negligence per se claim, and there simply is no authority that supports that. There's two different definitions. We have batteries and we have negligence. We have two different definitions of these common law causes of action for a reason. They can't magically create a battery negligence per se simply by calling it that on a piece of paper and putting it in front of a jury. And the case law is pretty straightforward. Intentional sexual conduct or contact cannot give rise to a negligent injury. That's the RWVTF. One cannot negligently assault another one. That's the auto owner's case. One cannot negligently batter another. These are intentional acts. The intent and the harm are the two elements of a battery or an assault. A negligence per se means you just did something wrong and it created some damages. It doesn't even mean it's offensive or harmful in any way. And in Judge Lang's May 12, 2018 order, which we're appealing on page 12, she specifically makes the finding that plaintiff's claim is simply a negligence claim that seeks to substitute a statutory standard of care for the reasonable person standard of care. Well, that correctly defines what a negligence per se claim is, but it jumps ahead of the argument, it jumps ahead of the game, and it concludes that battery is negligence. And I think what you will be deciding is an intentional tort, is a battery, could it ever be deemed negligence? That's simply what this case is about. And we're just saying, no, it isn't. We've got a long established case law and precedence that says it's not. They're two separate causes of action. You can't just rename it because it's a statutory violation and say that any violation of any criminal statute or non-criminal statute is automatically a negligence per se cause of action. So I think I think you're precluded from saying that violations of battery and assault type criminal statutes are ever negligence per se, because they all would fall under common law battery. We do not have battery per se. We do not have assault per se. We only have negligence per se on the books. So we're just asking for a reversal of the JNOV on the count two, Your Honor. Another thing is it conflicts. The jury's decision that there was no harmful or offensive conduct in the battery decision squarely contradicts the finding in number two, which we believe confuses the jury, that there was some type of other offensive conduct. So these are inconsistent verdicts, And that's because of the improper instruction to the jury. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fish. You will have time for rebuttal if you would like to use it. Counsel for respondent.
May it please the court. My name is Abigail Henschek, and I represent the respondent in this case, Ms. Renee Florek, who is in the courtroom with you today. This is a case about whether a defendant should be able to create a loophole in the law to evade a jury verdict, thus escaping liability for rape. On January 18th, 2013, Ms. Renee Florek took medication in connection to her throat cancer, and this medication makes her sleep very deeply. While she was asleep, her then-boyfriend, Mr. Randall Vanette, intentionally sexually penetrated her. This violated the Minnesota Criminal Sexual Conduct Statutes, Section 609.344. And in 2017, a jury found that because of this statutory violation, Mr. Vanette was liable for negligence per se. They also found that the plaintiff had not proved her burden to show a battery claim. My client's position is that this jury verdict and the district court's orders should be affirmed for three reasons. One, because what the appellant is asking for is an inconsistent application of the law that creates a loophole for this type of conduct, and allowing such a loophole is bad policy. Two, because there is no applicable case law or statutory authority to show that tort claims based on sexual assault should be treated differently than tort claims based on any other conduct. And three, because negligence per se and negligence can and have been used to cover intentional conduct. So let's talk about the loophole first. In this case, we have a jury verdict that Mr. Vanette violated a criminal statute that carries with it a punishment of up to 15 years in prison. The defendant argues today that there should be no tort remedy for that type of conduct. He argues this by trying to create a loophole, by trying to fix the jury instructions on negligence per se, but retain the jury instructions on battery, which under his argument are similarly incorrect. And the way, so he does this because because at trial, we offered jury instructions that said, you know, we are a single intent state. We don't have to prove intent to harm. It's inferred by law. And the appellant objected to that jury instruction, and the district court denied it. He gave the district court no opportunity to rule on whether intent is inferred as a matter of law because he raises this argument for the first time on appeal. And allowing intent to not be inferred in a battery claim, but allowing it to be inferred for a negligence claim creates a loophole where intentional conduct can be left out of tort remedy. And in this case, that's exactly what's happening. We have a jury verdict that Mr. Vanette intended contact but did not intend harm. And that's because jury instruction one reads, did the defendant intentionally cause harmful or offensive contact with the plaintiff? And the jury answered no. The third question said, did the defendant intentionally sexually penetrate the plaintiff? And the jury answered yes. And then they found that that sexual penetration was harmful or offensive when they awarded her damages. So what we have is a verdict that the defendant intentionally caused contact that was harmful or offensive, but didn't intentionally cause harmful or offensive contact. And the only logical conclusion that allows both of those things to be true is that the defendant did not intend the harm. Under the defense's argument, this sort of conduct should be excluded from tort remedy, and it is our position that that would be a bad policy for the state of Minnesota. The second reason that the jury verdict should be affirmed is because the defense has shown no applicable case or statutory authority showing that tort claims based on sexual assault should be treated differently than tort claims based on any other conduct. To support his claim that sexual assault can never give rise to a negligence claim, he cites to a number of insurance cases. But these cases aren't applicable here, and his argument relies on mischaracterizations and overly broad readings.
Do you have any cases where sexual assault, violation of sexual assault statutes have been the basis for a negligence per se action?
We haven't found any cases with that exact fact pattern. And it may be true that this is a case of first impression, but I don't think that that makes the claim impermissible. I think plaintiffs bring novel claims all the time. I think the basic principle of tort is that if you meet the elements of a tort, you have a claim in that cause of action, and we have met the elements of negligence per se in this case.
So, or any authority at all of any sort of harm to person criminal statute that's been used as the basis of negligence per se, as opposed to being, alleged to be a battery or other type of intentional tort.
In Dart versus Pure Oil Company, they go through a number of different statutes that have been used to used in negligence per se claims when they're discussing whether or not contributory negligence is a viable defense. And they list out kind of categories. One of those is child labor. One of those is protection of intoxicated persons. The categories are basically, can the person protect themselves? And I do believe that some of the statutes under those could also be brought as an intentional tort. And maybe most interesting, like this statute, this 609.344, is a statute that protects intoxicated persons, which is one of the specific categories they laid out in Dart versus Pure Oil Company. Of the three insurance cases that the defendant brings, that is Estate of Lehman v. Metzger, RW versus TF, and Auto Owners Insurance Company versus Todd, only one of those is even about a sexual assault claim. Auto Owners is a case about whether false imprisonment falls under an intentional tort exclusion, and RW is about the transmission of herpes between consenting adults. So anything these cases say is dicta. And the holding in Lehman, which is the only one of these cases involving, or not involving, but where the holding is about whether sexual assault has inferred intent for harm, it's a very narrow holding that limits it to insurance cases. The holding in whole reads, quote, "In construing the intentional act exclusion of liability insurance policies, where the underlying claim is that the insured intentionally sexually assaulted the victim, an intention to inflict injury will be inferred as a matter of law." This case doesn't contemplate how sexual assault should be treated under tort litigation. It only holds that insurance companies should not be paying the damages. And given the policy of insurance coverage, this makes sense. Courts are worried about indemnifying bad behavior, about allowing defendants to abdicate personal responsibility. I think we can all agree that, you know, rape or providing insurance coverage for rape is maybe not a great idea, but that's not what's happening in this case. Those arguments aren't applicable when a plaintiff is suing her abuser directly. There is no abdication of personal responsibility. Quite the contrary, we specifically ask that Mr. Vinette and Mr. Vinette alone be held responsible for his behavior. And finally, negligence per se and negligence can and have been used to cover intentional conduct. It's a long-standing principle of tort law that negligence can include intentional conduct, as shown by references to willful negligence. In his reply brief, Mr. Vinette argues that any reference to willful negligence is irrelevant because we haven't shown a case with the facts that we discussed earlier where a perpetrator brought negligence against her abuser. But as I said, that doesn't make the claim impermissible. In this case, a jury found a violation of the criminal sexual conduct statutes. The jury found that Mr. Vinette raped Ms. Florek. The defense's theory is that he should not be held liable for this behavior, but the law cannot reflect this misguided approach to rape. And for these reasons, we respectfully ask the court to affirm.
Thank you, Ms. Henchak. Counsel for appellant, do you wish to have rebuttal?
Briefly, yes. Thank you, Your Honor. You know, I think counsel's acknowledgement that there's simply no authority for their cause of action of a negligence per se intentional tort speaks volumes. And I would note that they put in their arguments in their brief that they're saying, well, maybe counts 3 and 4 should be called, or the answers to questions 3 and 4 on the jury verdict should be really treated as answers to counts 1 and 2, the battery claim. Well, that's, first of all, they don't fit within the definition of battery. They're just blips of verbiage out of a criminal statute. What's being attempted is to rectify their overzealousness in the charging and unfortunate convincing of the court below that this could be a viable cause of action, where they could have perhaps asked for an instruction, a jury instruction, that, you know, this could be deemed offensive and therefore unpermitted offensive contact and therefore a battery. In other words, a subset of a common law battery. They did not do that. They requested the whole world in this thing, so that they could use the exact verbiage of a criminal statute to establish a common law battery. And we're just we're simply requesting, Judge, that, you know, the plaintiffs have couched questions 3 and 4 as negligence per se. The court has made it abundantly clear that this is the questions 3 and 4 in the jury verdict form were answers only to a negligence per se cause of action. And the jury made it very clear there was simply no battery as defined by the court and as requested to be found by the plaintiff. So we believe that this case, the findings on 3 and 4 should be reversed as a really not being recognized by Minnesota law, which is what a judgment notwithstanding the verdict is, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fish. Thank you, Ms. Henchak. We appreciate your arguments on a very interesting legal issue, and the matter's been submitted. That is the last matter we have on the calendar for oral argument today, and so we are adjourned. Thank you.
Bye.